I am Christy Cole, and I am so glad all of you guys are here tonight. I work on staff at Grace Church in research and curriculum development, and I have been here, I guess, for 4 years, and I attend the Powdersville campus, so I'm glad Powdersville is represented tonight. My husband and I have been there since we got here. We came to Grace right after they launched the Powdersville campus, and had they not, we probably wouldn't have been here. So we were really excited about the campus model. So we're glad that you guys are all here. How many of you were at the conference? Okay, that's a majority. That's good. For those of you that weren't, all of the teaching is online. So tonight we may talk about some things that you're kind of like, okay, I feel like I'm missing something. And so I would encourage you to go back and listen to any of the teaching from the conference so that you kind of get the full effect of what we talked about. Because tonight, like we said, is extra. And so we're going to focus just a few minutes on some things that we feel like maybe we missed as an opportunity to address with a bunch of high schoolers in the room at the conference. And so some of it will be stuff that we did say, some of it will be stuff that we didn't say, and we're going to try to preserve the bulk of our evening tonight for Q&A. So, but here's who I feel like we have in the room, teen-wise. We've got girls that are in the popular crowd that have always kind of just fit in. They don't really struggle with social environments. They fit right in with the in crowd, always in the beauty pageants, always, you know, kind of rising to the cream of the crop. And so we've got you in here. Everybody loves you. We've got girls that have always been good girls. Maybe they don't have any real big issues, but you're not necessarily maybe feeling like you're in the in crowd. We've got girls that maybe feel like they've never fit in, that feel like they've kind of always been on the fringe and just feel like they don't know what's wrong with them, how to get people to like them. And then we've got girls in the room who are kind of rebels. I just don't care what anybody else thinks. Put on a tough exterior, and maybe inside you're really just crying out for somebody to just recognize you and affirm you and approve of you. So wherever you are in the room, wherever you might identify yourself, or maybe you feel like there that category, I didn't give a category for you guys. But what we want to say is that this is for all of this. This teaching, this issue of our bodies is for everybody. None of us get out of this unscathed. Whether you are in the in crowd and you've always fit in and everybody loves you, or whether or not you are the one that sits on the fringe and you feel like nobody ever notices you, we all struggle with this issue. Some of you are self-promoting. You are dying, craving affirmation and approval and self-worth. You are craving somebody to affirm your value. And so you are using your body to get it through sex. You are using your body to get it through dating. You are using your body to get it through the way you dress. And you are using your body to get it through trying to fit in, trying to look like everybody else, act like everybody else, talk like everybody else. And sin originates in our hearts. The reason why I'm talking about all of this, sin originates in our hearts, but it's acted out through our bodies. Our bodies matter, but we have to address our hearts. Because what's going on in our hearts is going to be lived out through our bodies. And so here's some things that some of you that may be self-protecting. If you are afraid to let anybody know you, if you are afraid of your emotions, you don't want anybody to know you suffer. You don't want anybody to know you hurt. You don't want anybody to know your weaknesses. And so you are withdrawing in self-protection. You are hiding. You aren't talking to your D groups, your small groups. You aren't talking to your leaders. You aren't talking to your moms. Maybe it's going as far as cutting, burning yourself with erasers. Maybe it is going as far as eating disorders. Maybe you are desperately striving to reach the ideal that is the ideal body that is plastered all over Pinterest. I mean, everybody has seen, you know, the six-pack ab pictures and do this 30-day crunch, you know, do this. I think I just looked at a 30-day squat plan, you know, get firmer thighs in 30 days, you know. And so, and we're looking at these images that are creating the ideal for us. And so maybe you are abusing your body through inordinate amounts of exercise, because we're not saying that exercise is wrong. Maybe you are actually stuffing yourself with food in an effort to feel emotionally fulfilled. And so wherever you are, whatever category you are finding yourself in right now, and even if I did not address a category that you might feel like you fit into, we all suffer with this issue, and we need to be open, moms, leaders, and students. We need to be open to the fact that we struggle with sin against our bodies. And we need to be willing to ask the Lord, in what ways are we sinning against our bodies? And so I have a couple of challenges for you. First, I'm going to go for the moms. We cannot afford to disengage. We cannot assume that our daughters are healthy just because they are not exhibiting signs of eating disorders, or because they're not exhibiting alcohol or drug abuse, or because they're not exhibiting cutting. We can't assume that our daughters are healthy. We have to engage. We have to enter in. And the challenge is going to be in the fact that our daughters often, well, I have a son, 14, and he is at the prime. Y'all are idiots. You don't know anything. You are old. You couldn't possibly know what life is like for me. And so when we try to enter in and engage that, it creates tension. We can't fight or accept, we cannot disengage. We have to be willing to enter into the tension. We have to be willing as parents to fight for our kids' lives and spiritual health. But we also can't control. We have to learn how to not try to force them into our mold, to not try to find our own identity and self-worth through our children. We have to learn how to move in a way as a consultant, as one who says, hey, I've lived a little while. I kind of have some experience in this. I was your age once too. I'm not stupid. I know what you're dealing with. And here's the thing. There is wisdom that comes with age. And so I'm just asking you to trust me. Just give me an ear. Just listen to me. We have to be willing to have that conversation. Now, daughters, your moms are not idiots. They're not. They've got experience. They've got wisdom. You may not be like your mother. You may not like the same things. You may not feel like she understands you. You may not want to hear what she has to say. But you have mothers that have been there and have some wisdom that they can impart to you, and you can benefit from that. And so mothers have a responsibility to enter in and engage, but daughters, you have a responsibility to receive and to listen and to see what your mother might actually have to share. And that likewise with your leaders, you know, with your small group leaders, there is wisdom there that you can benefit from. All right, so here's what Scripture is really clear about. Our bodies do not belong to us. They don't. They belong to the Lord. Not only is he our creator, but he died and purchased our bodies, and they belong to him. And so as with them belonging to him, he has ownership over that, and he has entrusted these bodies to us. And what that means is that it matters how I treat my body. It matters what I think about my body. It matters how I dress my body, what I do with my body, and what I believe about my body. Everything we do has spiritual ramification. We cannot necessarily hyper-spiritualize everything because, you know, we have physical bodies, you know, and so it matters that I exercise. It matters that I eat well. It matters that I, but the thing that we have said about culture is the way culture portrays all of those things is skewed. It's corrupted. It's not valid. And so we have to learn to discern through a biblical lens how we treat our bodies. It is a spiritual decision because this body belongs to the Lord. And so in the conference, we talked about the fact that our bodies are created. We talked about the fact that our bodies are a temple. And in them being a temple, the very real, powerful presence of the Lord dwells with us. He dwells with each of us individually, and he dwells with us corporately, in us corporately. And so what you do with your body impacts me as a member of the body. What I do with my body impacts you as members of the body. And so, and then we talked about the fact that our bodies are also broken, that they are the only part that has not been redeemed yet. This world, this created world, the earth, has not been redeemed yet. Our bodies have not been redeemed yet. And so it still suffers the brokenness of the fall. And so that brings aging and decay, and it brings death. It brings disease. And so all of these products that are marketed for anti-aging, oh, let's turn back the clock, fight aging, reverse the aging process, or, these foods will boost, you know, the collagen in your face, and so you won't have wrinkles. And okay, we're not supposed to age. We're not supposed to die because that's not what the Lord originally created. But that is what is going to happen. And so it is not about fighting. It is about aging well. It is about aging strong. And so we need to, as teenagers, to start understanding these truths now. You've got three primary influences in your life as teenagers. Right now, we've got kind of culture, pop culture, you know, everything that you're seeing on TV, on the radio, or hearing on the radio, seeing in the movies, reading in books, seeing on Instagram, seeing on Pinterest. You are being bombarded with images that our culture is releasing. And I have one thing to say about that. Culture does not care about you. Not one iota. All they care about is your money. There was a quote that I read, or actually I guess it was from a documentary I watched, and it was a popular fashion photographer, and he said that, where's my quote? He was not trying to represent reality, he is selling a dream. Culture does not care about you. It cares about your money. It cares about the profit line. It cares about being the next blockbuster movie. It cares about being the next greatest thing in fashion. And so being shaped by your culture means that you have to learn to look at your culture through a biblical lens. What is valued in culture is never attainable because it's a moving target. Over the years, you can see how beauty has transformed. What was ideal beauty, what was valued, has transformed through the ages. And now we even have the conflicting messages that thin is in, that strong is the new skinny, and that real women have curves. We've got women from Kim Kardashian, who is very voluptuous, to Jennifer Aniston, who is firm and fit, to Kelly Ripa, who is about as skinny as they come. And they are all elevated as beautiful, but you're always going to miss the mark somewhere. You're either not going to be that curvy, voluptuous woman, or you're not going to be that fit, six-pack ab woman, or you're not going to be just that supernaturally really, really tiny woman. And that's not who you're supposed to be. Culture is selling an ideal that is not realistic and it is not attainable, and you'll never measure up to that. And here's the other thing. Culture is pornifying young girls. In our sexuality class that we did not too long ago, there was an article that had come out that that I was thinking about as I went into class one day, and it was that the pornography industry was seeing a decline in their profits. And so they started marketing to women. They've started selling to women, softening it up, putting a little bit of a romantic air to it, and they're selling it to women. Girls, we've seen, what was that? Magic Mike. We've seen 50 Shades of Grey. It is just beginning. They are coming for you. And what is happening, and I watched one other documentary, and this lady said that through the sexualization of girls, through the ways that we are dressing our bodies, that we are perpetuating the abuses against women. That's not what we want. What we want is we want to fit in. We want to feel beautiful. We want to feel valued. We want to feel loved. We want to feel elevated. We want people to be like, oh, you're so beautiful. You're so great. And so what we're doing is we're compromising to get that. We are dressing our bodies in ways that make it difficult for men to not look, to not take that second look. And then we despise them and call them perverts because they are looking. That's not okay. That's not okay. We have a responsibility. It is not about making these legalistic lines about how low is my neckline, or how low is my hemline, or it's not about that. It is about this belongs to the Lord and is a representative of the Lord. And so how do I adorn it as a temple of God in a way that does not hinder the kingdom of God, but maybe even helps it? And so that could go to either extreme. That could go to not taking care of myself at all, not bathing, being stinky. Of course, John the Baptist did that. It worked for him, I guess. So it doesn't necessarily mean doing that. We don't want to hyper-spiritualize it and say, oh, well, then I don't need to take care of my body at all. No, we take care of our bodies. But we also don't go to the other extreme either and say, hey, it's my body. I can dress it how I want to. We can't allow culture and the trends of culture to drive what our closets look like. And so just because all you can find are 2-inch hemline or 2-inch inseam shorts doesn't mean that that's what we should be wearing because everybody else is doing it. And I know that the pressure to fit in is great. It is tough. It is hard. Middle school, high school, it is tough. I think it gets better around college age, right? A little bit? You hope so? Yeah. And trust me, it's still hard for us as women. There's still pressure. We still want to be beautiful. We still want to be valued. That doesn't stop. But we can't allow the latest trends to drive what our closets look like. We can't allow what's acceptable in culture to drive our behavior. And so it may be completely acceptable to have sex outside of the confines of marriage in culture. But that doesn't mean it's okay. So it's interesting that if you ever read the Old Testament, that the Old Testament says a lot that the Israelites should not go into and intermarry with the other tribes, the other cultures. And that is because the Lord knew that if they did, they would be absorbed into that culture. They would be transformed by that culture. And so the other influences that you have are your peers. You cannot expect that you are going to be more powerful and shape them, because more than likely they're going to be more powerful and shape you. We have to be really mindful of our peer groups, because we become like who we hang around. And that does not mean that we don't engage. Does not mean that at all. It does not mean that we devalue. And it does not mean that we judge. But it does mean that we have to recognize that who we are surrounding ourselves with will shape us. And then we have to think about ourselves. We have unhealthy motives that are driving unhealthy behavior. We have to be thinking about our thoughts, our feelings. We have to not listen to ourselves, but preach to ourselves. We have to talk to ourselves. That's what it means when it says, take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. We have to be self-reflective. Why do I want to wear those leggings as pants? Why do I want to wear the bikini? Why do I want to get my hair highlighted? I'm not saying that hair highlight is bad, because mine's always colored. So I'm not saying that. But we do need to look at, what are my motivations? What are the thoughts that are driving my behavior? What are the feelings that are driving my behavior? What are the cravings that are driving my behavior? I have to not listen to myself. I have to talk to myself. I have to give truth to myself. My spiritual condition is my responsibility. I have to engage my leaders. I have to engage my parents. I have to engage my community. I have to search the scriptures. I have to take responsibility for my own spiritual health. Nobody else is going to do that for you. Nobody. So we have to identify the voices in our heads. Okay, we have time for us to go ahead and open for Q&A. And I know I kind of ran through all of that really, really fast, but I want to give you guys some time to ask some questions. So I think Meredith's got a microphone, and Jessica's got a microphone. So why don't you guys just get started? What kinds of questions do you have? You can be about tonight. It can be about some of the questions from the conference.
Would you please just elaborate a little bit more about what do you mean by talk to ourselves?
I mean, yes.
What kinds of things should we be telling ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And I had some of that as kind of a closing piece, but let's talk about what that looks like. So when I am, I'll give you an example. So today I had a conversation that kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. And I felt a little devalued. I felt a little, whatever the opposite of affirmed is, I was wounded. It hurt. And I had to start asking myself, okay, so why does that hurt so bad? And why am I now wanting to go and do this in response to that? I want to go prove myself now. And so now I've got all of a sudden this drive to go over here and, you know, say, hey, I can do this. See, I can do this. And so at that point, I started to talk to myself and say, my worth is not found in that. My value is not found in that. It doesn't matter if I'm not gifted in that way, because this is what the Lord says. This is what is true. What is true is that He has created me uniquely, individually, with all of my my giftings, with all of my talents, with my height, my kind of natural weight that I go to, my hair color, my eye color. He has created me exactly as I am. And He affirmed that that was good. That is His creation. And that He loves me as I am, not in what I do, not in how I, it's not in, my value is not in the approval of others. It is not in being the prettiest or the best. And so it is a matter of, hey, this is what my head is saying, but this is what God's word says. And sometimes what I have to do in listening to myself and preaching to myself is I have to write it out. These are the thoughts in my head. And now I need to see what is the opposite. What is it that Scripture says? And write it out beside it. And that proves to be really, really helpful for me because I'm a visual person. And so I can try to tell myself something in my head, but till I put it on paper, it's hard for me to kind of really grasp it. And so that means me kind of comparing, this is what my head's saying, this is what God's word says. Does this match? And if it doesn't, then I need to start to try to move toward those truths, pray for the Lord to help me to overcome my unbelief, because that's what it is. It is proud unbelief. And then to help me to be empowered to live in the freedom of His truth and not the slavery that I have chosen. What is it like for you all when the battle over clothes begins?
When would you suggest a mother turns over the right to choose those little things? Like, would it be as early as middle school that you could say, I'm not going to choose your wardrobe anymore? Or, I mean, obviously we still speak into their lives and give guidelines, but when they have their own clothing allowance, are they then free to just go out and do what they want? When should mothers just step back?
Yeah, I don't know if there's ever a time that you completely step back, because I don't think that that would be good stewardship or discipleship of your children. You know, I think that the Lord has, and even as friends, we don't need to step back from one another. I think that where it crosses the line is if it's become control. And so I'd say it's going to be different probably for every daughter, because she's going to start to hit puberty at her own age. And that's where some of the tensions will start to, will start. And so as that begins, and I definitely say that around middle school, you start to see the peer pressure amp up. You start to see this real need to form her own identity, to fit in, to feel like she belongs. You see this, that her peers are becoming more influential in her lives than you are. And so I would say that at that moment, you're really starting to move away from the control we talk about in the parenting funnel. Do you remember? It's like control. Oh, I can't ever remember the funnel. But you're moving away from control to influence. And so in that, it is more of a, hey, let's talk about why is that outfit so important to you? And you're not necessarily addressing the hemline, the neckline, the tightness, or anything like that. It's more about the heart. And then as long as you buy her clothes, I say you've got, some authority there. However, if we just, I remember a very wise woman told me once that rules without relationship equals rebellion. And so it's a matter of, here's why, and let's talk about why you have a problem with that. What is the rub for you? And once she's buying her own clothes out of your house, then at that point, again, it's not a, okay, I'm done with you. You can still say, here's the thing. I'm really concerned about you and why, what is it that's lacking in you that is driving you toward this? Because I can guarantee you the drive toward ultra tight, ultra short, ultra low, there is a cry for approval, to be seen as beautiful, to fit in. It is not about just loving the clothes. It is either about loving her own body and finding pride in that and kind of exalting herself, or it is desperately needing somebody else to love and affirm her. And that's typically at the root of it. So did that help? It's kind of every daughter is going to be different. And how we as parents first model, then disciple, and like not just rules driven but heart driven, is going to make a difference. And once she is out of your house, there is nothing you can do at that point except for continue to speak truth and model. So, do you have anything you want to add to that? Yes.
I have a question for the daughters.
Yes.
Do you agree with what Christy says about the motivation to dress by the clothes? Is anybody brave enough to speak on it?
Okay.
We have a good question right here.
That's a great question. Girls, how would you like your mothers to approach you on that issue so you don't clash?
This is the interactive portion, daughters. I need somebody in this room to step up.
If the daughters would be embarrassed if the mothers dress the way sometimes that they dress, maybe that would solve.
Yeah.
I just would like to suggest clothes swapping, daughters. No, I'm just kidding.
I think one of the greatest things that my daughter, who will remain nameless, and I have come to is that, just kind of piggybacking off what the lady behind me just asked a minute ago about when do you let go, and this is something that's been hard for me too. I mean, I'm typically in Lycra most of the time because I'm a personal trainer, and sometimes she doesn't love that, but I have, and I've had to learn to do this, but I've allowed her to help me pick out things. And, you know, she's like, Mom, that looks really good. Or, Mom, that does not, no, that does not work at all. And, you know, pride being an issue, you know, I'm like, you know, I need to let her speak to that. And then that sort of has allowed a letting me speak, letting her father speak.
Yeah.
Carefully. It doesn't always work, but.
Yeah, and that actually just spurred a thought for me. Some of why there is such a clash is because daughters want to be autonomous. You don't want anybody speaking into you about anything because it is your life and you want to do what you want to do. Women want to be autonomous. Females, absolutely. And but it really is ramping up in middle school and teenage and high school years because they are starting, you're starting to develop as a person. You are starting to develop your own identity. You're starting to develop your own likes. And some of that pulling away is natural and good and needs to happen because you are going to leave one day and be somewhere else, whether it's married or whether it is, you know, a young single, married, I mean, an older single somewhere. But either way, you are eventually going to leave the fold. But what you need to learn now is the importance of community. And so you guys making decisions in community on what works, what doesn't work is a good thing. In asking your mother, hey, really? I mean, I really kind of like this, but I'm not sure my motives are real good for it, but I'm not sure, and what do you think about this? Asking your dads. Let me tell you, dads are a valuable, untapped resource for you girls. And you engage your fathers in these conversations because do you want to attract a godly man who is going to love you for who you are? Who is going to appreciate you? Because I bet your dad can teach you how to do that. Community is going to be important. And so as teenagers now, for you to learn the battle of autonomy, the desire to be kind of your own ruler and authority, to learn how to bring community in now is going to be super important for you because that struggle is only going to continue as you age, and it causes a lot of trouble, and it wreaks a lot of havoc, and it wounds a lot of people. And so for us as women, that being one of our greatest temptations, we need to invite people in to all kinds of things in our lives, including the way we dress. There are times that I have to go to my husband and say, okay, is this a little low, you know? And sometimes he's like, I like it. I'm sorry, wrong audience. Totally wrong audience. Wow, I think I just made myself blush. Yes. Yes. Right. And Yes, and that is the proper environment for us to draw and seek that desire to be affirmed in our beauty and in our bodies. That is the proper environment. We do not want to do that. And let me tell you, if you have ever worn some skin-tight outfit and some guy whistles at you and then you get mad at him, you are the one to blame. It is not a bad thing that men are attracted to us. That is okay. That is good. That is in God's design, ladies. But we have a responsibility to steward that beauty wisely and to recognize the power of it and to treat it with honor as a gift that the Lord has given us. I think I saw questions. Yes.
I think there's a natural developmental tension between
yes.
mothers and daughters.
Absolutely.
That dads can so much easier speak into.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we don't need to get in the battle. We just need to say, hey, why don't you go ask your dad about that?
Yeah.
And they can very matter-of-factly say, oh, that's good, or wait, no. Mm.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important because it also teaches them how men respond and mm-hmm. the dad, the uncle, the whoever is there, grandfather, can appropriately explain why that's not. And
absolutely.
How a man thinks about that. So it can
yeah.
take the pressure off of us and take out that tension when
yeah.
we have that support.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, bringing the dad in is key.
Sorry. I was just going to go back to the comment about the whistling man.
Yes.
And getting aggravated at him. But I think a lot of times, and we may not admit it, but a lot of times it is something that we want.
Oh, yeah.
And that that is a red flag in our mm-hmm. in our spirit to ask the question that you're saying, why did that make me feel good? That mm-hmm. when I was running through the neighborhood, that the guys, you know, working on that house made some comment or, you know, that was a crude comment that I don't like, but there was some something about that affirmed me.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband has taught both me and my daughter a couple of lessons about that. We were actually just last summer, we were on an anniversary trip, and I was running, and he was with me, but on his bicycle, and there were some workers in the area. And we were getting close to them, and he got up to a certain place. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm shielding you from those guys. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, they're going to look at your butt when you go by. And I don't want them to. And I'm like, are you kidding? He said, just wait. Just wait and watch. And we went by, and he said, okay, now turn around. And sure enough, they had stopped. He did the same thing to my daughter at the beach. There was a lady came out of the store. She had on just a, you know, how you'll go to the store at the beach, just a little cover-up or something. But it was very, very short. And he pulled Morgan back, and he said, just come here. I want you to watch this for a minute. And there were a couple of guys getting in a car over here. He said, watch them. And when she went to put the groceries in her car and bent over, they were, you know, knocking each other, saying, hey, look at that. He could hear what they were saying and showing her. He said that she has no clue, but if she did, it could have been something that would affirm her or not. And that's why everybody laughs when she says, ask your dad. But it really is an incredible resource, I think, for us as women and for our daughters that we don't even recognize things. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. But we don't even recognize what effect we're drawing to ourselves or attention we're drawing to ourselves. And sometimes when we do, it's not with the right motive.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of, like, moms and daughters that, like, struggle with their relationship. And I think a lot of people, like, it is partly the daughters, but it's also partly the moms. like, a lot of times when moms give advice, the daughters will feel it more as judgment than advice.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be very aware of how you put things. That's kind of why it works better sometimes to just say, go ask your dad, because it's more like a straight out, it doesn't sound judgmental,
mm-hmm.
or we maybe just don't take it as judgment. And then, like, maybe if your daughter gets in trouble or does something bad and you show your disappointment, I see a lot of times, like, my dad is one of these people, like, he'll hold on to the disappointment for too long, and if you like, constantly remind them that you're disappointed, that can damage your relationship. Like, I mean, be disappointed when it's appropriate to be, but don't, like, constantly bring up that you're disappointed with them. And then I know a lot of women who really try to control their kids' lives. Like, I mean, and I think at a certain point you have to kind of go from rules to guidelines, because, I mean, it teaches your kid to make better decisions on their own if you're more guiding them than ruling them. So they learn to make their own decisions, and then they don't feel like you're trying to control every part of their life, and they feel more independent, and it lessens the rebellion, and they feel like maybe they have more control and they feel freer in their relationship. And then, like, relationships never work when one party tries to control the other party. And so it opens up that space and relieves some of the tension. And I think the communication is very important.
Well, I think that here's both parties have a responsibility. Parents have a responsibility to communicate with love, and daughters have a responsibility to hear and believe the best of their parents. And so here's one thing that I know. When I was growing up, my parents would say something to me, and the way that they said it and then how I heard it, it got twisted by the time I heard it. And then I thought that they were just, that I was never good enough or whatever. And then I watched the same thing happen with my son. And we're having a conversation the other day, and I asked him a question. And he said, I'm not stupid. And it wasn't a question that would have even, I mean, there are some questions that would imply I think he's stupid, but this was not one of them. And I don't even remember what the question was, but it wasn't one of those that would imply that. And yet that's what he heard. And so parents have a responsibility to try to communicate clearly and with love, and our daughters, our children, have responsibilities to try and hear and clarify. And so the same thing can be said with a wife and her husband. And so when my husband says to me, hey, you're not taking care of yourself, you're not taking care of your body, and I hear you're fat and ugly and I'm not attracted to you anymore, then I have a responsibility to engage him and say, hey, this is what I heard, but I don't think this is what you meant. So can we talk about this? Because this really hurt me. And so it is important that that both parties strive toward effective communication. Now, here's the other thing. Guidelines and influence, like moving toward a role of influence in your daughter's life, is important, because she does need to learn how to make some decisions on her own. She needs to be able to fail and have to experience the consequences of that. She needs to be humiliated and experience the consequences of that. She needs to suffer the poor choices that she might make. And so it doesn't mean that you rule every decision that she makes, especially in this stage of her life. You are moving more toward a position of influence, And however, there is still authority. And Scripture is very clear about children obeying and submitting to the authority of their parents. And so as long as they are your parents and you are in their home and you are dependent upon them, then there is an obedience to come up underneath your parent as your ultimate authority. And the same is true with me and my husband. He is my ultimate authority. God's there. So, you know, if my parent ever asks me to sin, no. Because at that point, God is my ultimate authority. If my husband ever asks me to sin, no. Because God is my ultimate authority. And so I need to engage community in that. But we each are submitting to authority. We submit to governmental authority. That's scriptural. And so we are going to naturally want to buck authority. But we also have to recognize that sometimes it's a good thing. And we have to be willing to receive from when it is messy and not good. You know, parents are, I will speak from both being parented and now being a parent. I thought that I had terrible parents. I really did. I thought that they were just terrible. I mean, my dad was harsh and cruel and, you know, whatever. And now my son thinks that we're terrible. He thinks that we're harsh and that we're cruel, and he doesn't understand why we, you know, do things the way we do them. And I see now that, hey, he was just trying to love me, and he was doing it in the best he had at the time that he had it. You know, I mean, he did the best with what he had. And he was a good father. And so I think that we have these expectations of one another. We have expectations as older women of our husbands to do things the right way, to approach us in the right way, to say the right thing, to love us the right way. And we don't really extend grace when they don't. We just kind of punish them for it. And I think the same holds true with you girls. When your parents don't approach you perfectly. But let me tell you, it is hard to be a parent. It's hard. It's not easy. And so one day you will know that. And so there's extending some grace to your parents as well. And that's probably going off of not exactly what you were talking about, but you just spurred my brain on. I'm sorry. We've got one right here first.
Yeah, I was wondering how we could apply this to, like, sports, especially volleyball.
Oh, yes. Volleyball outfits are rough. Yeah. Okay, Meredith. I was never athletic. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think you have an answer for that one?
As far as volleyball, I've had a few girls playing it, and you can't really do much about the uniform when they're on the court. But I've always had the rule that when they are off the court, they have to put on their shorts over it and a T-shirt if their jersey is just ridiculously tight. And it hasn't always been popular with my daughters, but they do come under my authority.
Yeah.
And we'll do it most of the time okay, but sometimes a little begrudgingly. But, yeah, those uniforms are just the pits.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great answer.
When she said sports, my mind didn't go to the uniforms. My mind went to how do we use our bodies in a way that we perform this thing, we compete, we want to win, we want to be our best. But is there a part of that, and I know there is as far as that we don't make it our idol, mm-hmm. What other thoughts come to you, not in the outfit, but just in the performance and the achievement side of sports with our body?
Yeah. I think that there's, and Meredith's got a lot of experience with that because she played through college. So I'm going to let her speak into that as well. But I think we are all at risk of finding our identity in things that we do. And sports are so performance driven, and you get so many accolades when you are performing well, and you are in the pits when you are not performing well. But that's going to be a lot of life. And so, I mean, we're measured at work by our performance. The challenge is always going to be to not find our identity in that. And so today, when I was wounded and I had to say, okay, this is okay, because that is not where my ultimate worth lies. And if it is a gifting and something that I might need to continue to pursue and pour myself into, then I have a responsibility to steward that well and to work hard in that. If it's something that may not be beyond my college career, then, you know, I enjoy it. But, you know, why don't you speak into that some?
I played sports all the way throughout middle school, high school. I was one of those who went from a fall sport to winter sport, spring sport, and then I played all summer. And so I lived it, breathed it, all that. And then I went to college, was blessed to receive a scholarship to play at Furman, and so I played softball there. And I will just speak to athletes in the room. You have pressure at whatever level you are at when you are playing sports, about your performance, but also about your body. Mm-hmm. And there are things now that I didn't realize until getting out of that environment that I realized that were so incredibly distorted, that I was so incredibly just broken over. Like I had a bad self-image. And the reason why was because I had a coach who evaluated in the weight room, who would walk around, and you want to feel like you're doing a good job. You want to please the person who is going to give you playing time. So it's yet again, it's a moment of, this person is now not just looking at my performance, but also looking at my body. And so there'd be moments of just like, you know, coming by wanting to tap my shoulder, feel my arm, make sure that I'm solid. And so there's all these different moments that I think that sports are really, really great. But I think that the part that Christy talks about is the culture's influence is so incredibly hard that when you play sports, one of the things you cannot get rid of is your view of your body. Because how many people in this room are dancers? Dancers, okay, got dancers. They all sit together. I love it.
Cheerleaders.
Okay. Dancers, cheerleaders, volleyball people, anybody who wears a little bit of a uniform that's more clingy. There is no way that we as broken individuals can step onto our court, into our dance studio, without looking at somebody else in their outfit. And what do?
Compare
ourselves to them, right? It's, I wish I had longer legs to fill out my spandex pants. That was always mine. I was like, these don't look quite right on me. But it was constantly comparing. And so I think that, and one of the parts I love that Christy said, is that you are going to experience this in any avenue of your life. So sports is a very unique opportunity to train yourselves now. But here's the thing. She also said this. She said, if you have a peer influence that is really, really strong, chances are it's going to pull you down with it. And so you have some hard decisions to make. And there might come a time, I'm not saying that it is for you, but there might come a time where you're like, you know what? I'm not going to participate in that dance event because my credibility as a believer is at stake, and I just can't do it. And so there are certain moments like that. And so with uniforms, with all of that comes with sports, which I'm a sport person, so I love the opportunity that you each have as high school girls to speak to your friends about Jesus by the way you carry yourself on and off the field, on and off the court. You get to explain to them, Swope, you get to explain to them why you're wearing what you're wearing off the court. and you get to speak to them. I'm like, that's awesome. You get to explain to them when everybody is crying over a loss, because that's what we do, right? It's the biggest thing ever. You're like, I'm going to die, right? Or like you didn't nail your triple axel or whatever. I mean, I can do that too, standing up. But like you are just distraught. But what do you do as a believer? You have an opportunity to stand firm for the Lord and to be a witness to other people. And so I don't think we run from it, but I do think that we carry ourselves in a way that we do not compromise what we believe. And that we give a voice to what we believe. Does that make sense? I mean, I could go on for a long time because I love it.
I had a question here.
I just wanted to say something to the moms for a moment. It's good to be aware of your daughters and what they're wearing and that they're being modest. But you also have to check your opinions and your expectations of what you thought your daughter was going to be like before she ended up being what she's being like. I struggle with this with my own daughter. I expected her to be athletic and into all that stuff like I was as a child or teenager. And she is princess, has no interest in sports whatsoever, and that is who she is. And so I may look at her and say, that's not what I thought you would be wearing at this age, or... Mm-hmm. You know, even with my mom, you know, I was very athletic and she was wanting me to wear the skirts and dresses and stuff like that. But you have to check those opinions when you're talking about this type of stuff, that you're not causing your daughter's body issues.
Yeah.
Because we can do that just as easily as moms, where they may be fine with who they are and they're being completely modest in their
right
jeans and t-shirts. And we do need to teach them to have a good appearance and to present themselves well. You know, you don't want sloppy, messy, dirty kids running around, but don't cause your daughter's body issues by saying, you know, you could dress up a little. You could do this. Why don't you right do this with your hair or your makeup or whatever? She might be fine with the way God made her and doesn't think that she needs the makeup. And you shouldn't cause her to say, hey, you know, your eyes would look better if you did this, you know. So just a thought yeah to the mom.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sometimes as parents, we tend to find our identities in our children and our value and our worth and our affirmation in our children. And so we're not creating them in our own image and trying to get them to fit our mold. They are unique individuals that have been created as God intended them to be. And so we want to help them explore who he created them to be and help them be the best version of that. And so for my son, that has worked out in that my husband's very athletic. He's very outdoorsy. My son is very strategic, bookish, likes to be at home. And so we started trying to explore, okay, this is not who he is, and it's not for you to force him into that mold. He is more this, so let's help him be the best this he can be. So I absolutely love that. It is not about, hey, you need to look like this. It is, let's be the best version of you that you can be. And so, yes, absolutely, great point. We have another one back here.
This is about the clothes culture, and I'm sorry, it's kind of like off the subject, but yet it is on the subject of clothes. Like you said, you know, the styles and the trends, and we have hunt, you know, high and low and found a few stores, but I just wondered, through the moms and the daughters here, have they found certain stores that they like to shop that, you know, found modest but yet attractive clothing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think you might have been the one that said it to me the other day, that there are a lot of moms that we can look at that dress trendy and hip, that do it very modestly and very attractively. And so sometimes girls can look to their mothers. But yeah, it's stores that are, I mean, anybody found stores that they think are great?
They have, they're coming to Greenville. It's coming to Haywood Mall.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
But we literally will take trips to Charlotte. I mean, I have four girls, so my husband just bucks up and goes. And
aww.
There's usually a fight in the mall, and we have to stop and pray somewhere to get everybody's attitudes right. But it's just drama. But, I mean, you know, like, she, like, this one I stuck for years and years in clothes that I thought were pretty and cute. And which was Gymboree, and she would go to the store, and anything sparkly or shimmery she would touch, and I'd be like, stop that, don't touch that. And so, but now, I let her buy what she wants to buy, you know, as far as that goes, and she picks out stuff that I would never, ever, ever wear. But Forever 21's coming, they're super cheap, and, you know, you can find decent stuff in there that's pretty modest. You gotta, some stuff's not.
Yeah. Old Navy.
Old Navy. What are you saying, Shelby? Old Navy.
Although, let me say, I have had trouble finding shorts of decent length.
As someone who I've struggled with body image issues definitely in the past and eating disorder issues and stuff, and I definitely went through a time where I was obsessively exercising like two or more times a day. And I know you kind of touched on the topic of exercise already,
yes.
But what else do you have to say about that? Like, when do you think exercise can be like too much?
Yeah. I think that is also going to depend on the person. And so we've got a girl right now that we are working with who she's probably not over-exercising, but because there is an unhealthy motivation and an unhealthy tendency that is driving it, we're actually challenging her to maybe come back a little bit. And so... again, that's a very individual that I think sometimes has to be worked out in community. I know at our conference, the pastor Bill White that closed the conference for us had a great point. He said, "Train your body for what you're called to do." And so he said he was called to be a middle-aged pastor and an old pastor. And so he needed to exercise his body to age strong, to age well. And so what does that look like for him? For me, you know, I'm not athletic. I'm not trying to earn some scholarship somewhere. I'm not going to be CrossFit competition girl. That's not me. And so, but I need to be moving my body. And so I need to be walking. I need to be doing yoga. I need to be... There's my friend who's helped me with that. But it needs to be a decision made in community, honestly. With somebody who's going to ask me some really hard questions and dig beneath the what I'm doing to what is the motivation and why I'm doing it. And anybody that has ever struggled with eating disorder behavior is also really susceptible in exercise. And so my understanding of that is that particularly needs to be discussed really, really well. And so in conversations that I've had with some women that have recovered from some eating disorder behavior, some of them are training for half marathons right now. And it's funny because they've gotten some injuries, but two of them have gotten some injuries. And they're like, really? Okay, Lord, I thought I was doing okay. So, you know, but they're just having to be in a constant conversation with the Lord about, hey, I mean, is this okay for me to do? And so I'd say that I can't give a blanket answer on, or a real confined answer on that. And I don't think it would be fair to do that. But I say community really needs to be a part of that decision on a regular basis. And there's like a constant self-reflection and asking yourself, okay, why am I motivated to go exercise right now? Because sometimes we're motivated to exercise for stress release, which isn't necessarily bad. But what happens when I'm injured and I can't exercise? How am I going to release my stress? And so I need to be learning to go to the Lord with my stress, or when I need to... need to get some frustration out, or when I need to feel better about myself, and kind of not just let that be my comfort, my security, my control, and my constant go-to. And so there are things that we will do that we will seek to fill instead of seeking the Lord. And so we're going to have to ask ourselves some questions there, but we can't hyper-spiritualize and say, well, my body doesn't matter. It's really just my spirit that matters, because no, my body matters. It does matter. And so as someone who's been entrusted with this body, then I do need to take care of it, and I do need to move it and exercise it and feed it well. So avoiding either extreme, does that help? Okay.
So we have one more question. I think we got time for one more.
Ms. Caitlin. Thanks. What is your opinion on bikinis?
Oh, I knew that question was going to come. Huh? It is a great question. I like them. I like them. I think they're super cute. And I think they make super cute bikinis. And I think that there may be times that it is okay, you know. But I think that that needs to be a conversation that I have with, again, in community. So with parents, with it's going to be appropriate based on where I'm going and who I'm going to be with. And again, it goes down to my motivation. Why do I want to wear the bikini? You know, do I want to wear it because it actually makes me feel good about this super cute little tight body that I might have that other people are going to look at and envy, or because everybody else is wearing it? You know, I wear a tankini, and sometimes I wear the mother skirt. I never thought I would see that day, but I do. And I found some really cute bathing suits that have these cute little, you know, little skirt bottoms that go with them. And so it's not about that there's nothing cute that is not bikini, you know. You just have to work harder to find it. And then it's about when and where is appropriate, and then the authority. And so I say, when you're going on a church retreat, not the place. When you are, when you're hanging out with a mixed crowd, it may not be the place. If it's going to be you and your girlfriends at a pool, just, you know, hanging out, having a girls' day, yeah, maybe. I mean, I had a woman. Instagram, no Facebooking it, no Instagramming it. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that's actually, that's very self-promoting. Oh, they said, Monique said, don't Instagram it. Don't Facebook it. The boys are watching. And so here's the thing. That actually makes me feel good. When I Instagram my picture, when I Facebook my picture, when I tweet my picture of me in a bikini, or me taking my little selfies of, you know, this new little, you know, skimpy little shirt that I got or whatever, when I'm taking these pictures and I'm putting them out there, what's the purpose typically in me putting them out there? It's actually because I want to feel good, because then I get liked and I get, you know, comments on the pictures, and it starts to boost my ego and make me feel good about myself. And so, you know, I say that that actually is a real corrupted form of the beauty that God has entrusted us with. Okay. It is, and it is about, you can, modesty is always about the heart, and you can put on too much and be immodest, and you can have too little and be immodest. That was a great point.
A question, comment thing about the whole, you said something about on a church retreat, maybe not, but at like another place, okay. What always I think gets me about that is for me personally, I don't understand why I need to dress differently for church,
yes,
and for like school or hanging out with my friends. Is I feel like my dress shouldn't have to, like, if I'm dressing in a way that's inappropriate for church, I shouldn't be dressing that way at all. So why can't I wear leggings with a really long t-shirt on a church retreat?
Yeah. Well, hey. Okay, wait, let me say this. I wear leggings. I love leggings. I wear them with tunics that come down to my knee. And they're really cute, and I love them, and they're comfortable. And I think you can wear them in a very modest way. So I am not knocking leggings. What I'm saying is wearing them as pants, where the shirt just barely covers your rear end, or maybe doesn't cover your rear end, which really is the trend. I see not just teenagers doing that, but mothers. And so I want to say I'm not knocking leggings. I think they can be really cute in the right way. Your point was very valid in that we don't, it is not about conforming to rules and dressing for this crowd in this way and this crowd in this way. But I am saying there are times that there may be that it's perfectly appropriate and okay. And so if I am on a girls' getaway weekend, you know, and I am not, and my heart is right, and I've sought community, and I'm not trying to promote myself in front of other people, then is it possible that I can wear it and not be sinful? I think so, yeah. Is it, you know, I had a mother approach me one day about her daughter was asking about it, but that some days her husband wants her to wear a bikini for him. And so her daughter was challenging her on, well, why can't, you know, why is it okay here and not okay here, you know? And so it's, again, one of those kind of, we want to nail things down and have real, real clear lines, and that's legalism. And so we're not going to create legalistic lines here. I'm not, I don't want you to hear me doing that. It is about my heart. And a lot of times what is driving my desire to wear a bikini is I want to be looked at. A lot of times what's driving my desire to wear those super tight pants is that I want to be admired. I want to be thought of as beautiful. I want to be, I want to one-up those around me. You know, I want to be better than, I want to look better than, I want to be the one that stands out in the crowd but yet kind of still fits in. And so that's more of the challenge. It's a, hey, we're not going to create some real legalistic lines here. We're going to have really deep, intentional conversations around some issues and determine when and where might be appropriate for some things. And we know in a mixed crowd, oftentimes, it is not appropriate, you know? So, does that help? Okay. I saw another hand go up. Hey.
Hi. On the lines of bathing suits and stuff, my oldest is married, and I have a 12-year-old. And I think as my college age and older ones have made different decisions, especially as far as swimsuits, it's been very hard for me personally to see the decisions they've made. My oldest ended up, you know, buying a bikini for her honeymoon, and I was like, okay. But it's because her husband wanted her to wear a two-piece, and she does now. And, I mean, all the teaching that we've talked about, it's, from a mom's point of view, is frustrating. But at the same time, I guess why I'm saying it is there's a point where I no longer have authority in that right. decision. And that's okay. I'm glad. I'm encouraged that she's coming under his authority. But it's a part of me has had to just, you know, let go and let it go. And then for the next ones that are in college, you just get to a point where you can keep talking if that conversation is open. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then you just say the Lord has to work on them
yeah.
in their own time. We're all at different places. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, like for Renee and the next one down, I still have that authority over
yeah.
directly. And so I think someone had asked about, you know, when do you start peeling layers off?
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of naturally happens. And then it's a challenge being the mom to not keep driving a point in.
Yeah.
And don't beat a dead horse.
Mm-hmm.
And just pray.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think in the final part of that with, you know, in a church, on a church retreat, that's coming up underneath the authority of the church and the rules that have been, the structure that has been put in place. And so, again, that's kind of a respecting that as well. And so there it's more about, hey, this is what the church is trying to ask me to do, and so I'm going to come up underneath that.
Yeah, and I know we are getting close to time.
Yeah.
And so I would love to keep asking questions. But one of the things, just kind of jump in, modesty piece, and I know, girls, you guys have probably had conversations with me, if you guys are here, is one of the biggest things I love when Christy said it was actually thinking about whose we are when we were getting dressed in the morning and thinking about who is our king and who really owns our body. And so some of the conversations that I've had with you all, either personally or in group settings, is I think that one of the things that we end up talking about is that, and I'm not saying this as bad or anything, but it's just, well, Meredith, I just don't think about it. I don't think about what that boy is going to think about me. I don't think about what God thinks about what I'm wearing. I'm just getting dressed. It's just easy. I just got to put this on. I got to go. And so what I hear constantly of just what we're talking about is that Christy is saying that our bodies matter, and so it's going to take us a little bit longer to get dressed. It's going to take us a little bit longer to go short shopping or to go jeans shopping. Who loves to buy jeans? No one. That's a miserable process. That and bras, right? And so you sit there, and I think that one of the biggest things for our high school girls is to be able to wake up in the morning and tell yourself that you are the King of Kings. You are the Lord of Lords. You belong to God, and that we need to dress in that way. We need to think about that when we actually start putting on clothes. And so to remain and actually come back to your mom, she's like, oh, I didn't really think about it. Or come back to me and be like, oh, I'm not concerned. That's actually that's why we're here. That's what we're trying to do. And so, Shelby, there may be an opportunity. And I'm jumping back to you now, is your question about, okay, why is it not acceptable at church? Is I think Christy's, when she said church and swimsuits, is she's referring to a mixed gender environment. And she said church. There may be a time when we get a small group of girls.
Right.
And we go, and it is an appropriate opportunity to wear different types of bathing suits. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that she's talking about is the mixed gender. And what does that look like? And then coming up underneath authority. Because I totally get, we do. We need to be who God's asked us to be at all times. So not just while you show up at church. We got to have conversations before you start just, you know, putting a stamp on it and being like, oh, this is who I am. We don't need to fake that.
Yeah.
So yes. can you pray for us?
I can.
And then I'll dismiss y'all.
Yeah. Let me just say one last thing. The issue with our body and trying to, our body image issues that we have, the answer, the solution to that is not self-worth, self-value, and self-esteem. That is not the answer. It is not about thinking better of ourselves or thinking more of ourselves. It is actually about thinking of ourselves less. It is about self-forgetfulness. It is about gazing on the Lord who defines us, and making much of him, not making much of us. And the culture that's around us wants us to make much of ourselves. They want us to prove ourselves. They want us to one-up the other. You know, it's all about, hey, go and make yourself great. You just need better self-esteem. You just need to build your self-worth. You just need to feel better about yourself. That is not the answer. It is about not me at all. It is about recognizing that this life has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the God who created me and me bringing him glory, me representing him well, me stewarding the gifts that he has given me, and believing in him as my creator. And Tim Keller has a great quote that I'll close this with us, for us. He says, the thing we would remember from meeting a truly gospel humble person is how much they seemed to be totally interested in us, because the essence of gospel humility is not thinking more of myself or thinking less of myself. It is thinking of myself less. Gospel humility is not needing to think about myself at all. A truly gospel humble person is not a self-hating person or a self-loving person. They are a self-forgetful person. It is about being a there you are person, not a here I am person. So let me go ahead and pray for us. God, thank you so much because you are so great. You are so good. You are where we find our worth and our value, and you reflected in and through us is beautiful. But Lord, we mask that. We corrupt that. We abuse that. We hate that. And so we just pray that we would be people who don't have our eyes focused on ourselves, but that we would be steadily focused upon you, that we would not be swayed and distracted by the culture and what culture thinks is beautiful, that we would not be tempted to fit into the culture because that seems easier and more fun, but that we would be bold and humble at the same time, that we would be willing to not fit in, that we would be willing to represent you well, and that it wouldn't be a rules-based mentality, but that it would just be because we love you, because you are so good to us, because you are so gracious and merciful with us. God, may we catch a vision of who we are in you so that we don't have to prove ourselves to anybody else. We don't have to be liked. We don't have to be in the in crowd. We can just be free to be who you created us to be and all the beauty that is in that. God, when we truly remove the covering that we try to put on and let you shine through, it is gorgeous. God, please let us be that. Please help us to live in that freedom. We love you. Amen.